Well, it's a combination of things. I think we all have natural tendencies toward things. We also, that also means we can be extra vulnerable toward other things. It's just being aware of it. It is really can be the game changer. And what that's what's great about the assessment is it helps us to see blind spots.
Okay, this is another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. My guest today was introduced to us by another guest, which is Bob Sager. And this is Adam Rosenzweig, whose name I'm probably totally butchering in the background. But Adam, thanks for joining me.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
How do you properly pronounce your last name for the record?
It is Rosenzweig. So Adam Rosenzweig.
I'll have to practice it 100 times. And Adam became highly recommended because of his work related to emotional intelligence. Is that probably that's what you're best known for, right?
Correct. Yes.
So, what sort of work do you do? Like, first of all, I guess, what is emotional intelligence? And then who do you help with that?
Okay. Well, I mean, emotional intelligence is something that's been becoming more popular over recent years. The concept has been around for quite a while, decades, but it's getting a lot of traction. And, the way I describe it is it's our ability to understand what we're feeling while we're feeling it and understand where those emotions are coming from, because a lot of bad behavior or good behavior is the result of our emotions and the thoughts that precede them. So emotional intelligence is our ability to understand where those emotions are coming from, what it is we're actually feeling, why we're feeling it, how that affects our behavior, and how that affects other people at the same time. Because, a lot of the problems that companies run into are the result of bad behavior or good behavior. The success, if I were to ask you or anybody else, what is the biggest reason that you've had success in your life, most of the time you get an answer relating to behavior. I have a good work ethic. I have, I'm honest. I'm trustworthy. I'm loyal. If somebody says what it makes up a good leader, you're going to get answers that are behavioral related rather than, yeah, he was great at PowerPoint or he was great at.
Okay.
Things like that.
Skills versus action.
Yeah.
Action being behavior, right? Like it's like how you act in the moment or act in specific situations.
Yeah, and not that the IQ stuff is not important. The IQ is still important, the ability to do all those things, but the key is to combine the two so that performance can be at its best. And so, I compare it to IQ. If you're going into battle and you have a sword in your hand, your IQ is your weapon, your sword. Your EQ is your ability to wield it. So if I'm excellent at my job, but I'm a jerk and nobody likes to be around me, my ability to actually do my job is really hindered because of a lack of emotional intelligence. And so what I do for companies is I help with people problems. If somebody has a stress, if somebody needs help with stress management, if somebody needs help with change management, change management is all about getting a whole team of people on board with a project. Or a merger or whatever the case may be. That has to do with behavior and getting emotional buy-in. When you're talking about employee retention, pre-screening tools, the ability to hire the right people, not just keep them. I have my hand in various things, and it's all based on emotional intelligence. And I use a tool called the EQI 2.0. which is built by a company called Multi Health Systems. I'm certified in their program, and it takes this concept of emotional intelligence out of the sky, because it's sort of this abstract sort of idea, and brings it down into something that's tangible. You have an assessment that's scientifically validated. It shows you your EQ skills, your skill set. Okay, here are my strengths. Here are my points of development that I can improve upon, because that's the amazing thing about EQ is that it can be enhanced. It's trainable. So things like empathy, things like social responsibility, interpersonal relationships, being assertive or too assertive, things like being independent, you know, being able to stand on my own 2 feet and not depend on other people, but still being willing to take advice. All these things are behavioral in nature. And so I help a company enhance its people through that training. And I partner with a psychologist who's my mentor and my friend, Dr. English. She lives in St. Augustine. I live in Ocala. And we're a team together. She has her program. I have my emotional intelligence. So together we are in the professional development field, and we take the problems out of people problems, as I like to say.
It's interesting. And I think that answers one question that was in my head, which is how much of this is, first of all, can you improve? And second of all, how much out of the box is this based upon how you were raised versus kind of biology factors, like what you kind of inherit as your temperament, or is there an idea? Do we understand that?
You know, it's a combination of things. I think we all have natural tendencies toward things. We also, that also means we can be extra vulnerable toward other things. It's just being aware of it is really can be the game changer. And what that's what's great about the assessment is it helps us to see blind spots. Where am I, you know, where are my strengths? And, oh, wow, I didn't know that I was having trouble here, because the assessment is accurate. And it'll say, hey, maybe you're too aggressive. And that's where somebody like me would come into play, because I help somebody interpret the results and say, you know, because they're all these EQ traits in this model that I use, is they're all interrelated and they're all happening at the same time. So if we're high in one, low in another, and high in this one over here, how can they interact with each other and what kind of behavior would follow? And so maybe we're doing something we don't realize that's sabotaging our progress or our success in our job, in our business, whatever it is, and then go from there.
Is it very situational? Like the assessment, is it posing scenarios and then assessing your response to it? Or
there are others that do that. This one in particular is a self-assessment, and it pretty much just asks, I wouldn't call them questions, it's just items. It says, it'll give a statement like, I am good on projects by myself. I am, you know, it'll give, they call them items. There are 133 of them. And you just answer all of them. That's what I appreciated about it, because it's so thorough. 133 different items that you fill. It takes about 20 minutes. You know, 20 to 30 minutes to fill out. And you, to the best of your ability, you answer what you feel. What am I feeling when I read this statement? And that's the key when I tell people to go through the assessment is, you know, just answer what you feel, even if you don't like the answer.
Right.
Because that helps.
Right.
Yeah. We want to be as accurate as possible.
Which doesn't help anybody.
Well, right, because if we try to fake it, we could actually hurt ourselves, you know. And you know, the more accurate we can be, the more beneficial it can be. So that's that. I mean, did I answer your question?
Yeah, totally. Okay. So let's say someone does this assessment, they see a pattern that maybe they understood, but they've done nothing about. How does someone typically, like, I understand awareness. What are some examples of people that recognized maybe something they were struggling with or that was bad behavior? And then how did they address it?
Probably the best example I can come up with was me. You know, I mean, the whole reason I began my company was because actually even before I got into, you know, I realize what it is now. My mentor, Dr. English, I went through her program. And I recognized that there were things I had to change, one of which was I was a really critical person, overly critical. And I didn't realize that. And it was actually, it's something I was vulnerable to, but it was also something that was a learned behavior growing up. Because what people don't realize is all of our baggage from childhood comes with us. You know, there's not a single person on this planet that is not affected by their youth. And the kind of culture they grew up in, the kind of religion they grew up in, the kind of family, whatever, the family of origin, religion of origin, all that stuff. And, you know, for me, this is just one example of how I was really critical, and it was affecting my marriage. I didn't realize it because I was desensitized to it. So being aware of that, then I got the help that I needed to say, hey, instead of being critical, you can do this. And it's not like I wanted to be that way. I didn't even know I was being that way.
It was just your natural response to a scenario, right? It's like somewhere you had like a, it almost is like, because you mentioned it, it's like, read this and then give me your response to it. It's almost like what your immediate response is important because you're probably not thinking.
Right?
You're just like reacting. Yeah.
All of our behavior is preceded by a thought. And our minds move at the speed of lightning.
Right.
And, you know, so if you actually slowed your thoughts down and wrote them out on a sheet of paper, you would realize just how fast your mind moves when it comes to something. I say one of the things I made a post about recently was, when you hear the words think big, what do you think of? And I got all kinds of responses. I got, you know, thinking outside the box. I got responses about being bigger than yourself, having higher goals, all these big dramatic concepts that are squashed into two words. And so that's how powerful emotion is. When you actually write your emotions down, all kinds of data happens. And so when you can back that up and slow it down and actually pay attention. And when I became aware of it, then I started paying attention. And I said, oh, because we're habitual. You know, our habits are habitual. So I've had all these thoughts that were automatically happening so fast, I didn't even realize what was happening. And then when it was pointed out to me, I was like, oh, yeah. You know what?
Really screwing me up.
Yeah. No wonder this isn't working.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, that happened before I got into the EQ. But what the EQ assessment would do, if I had taken the EQ assessment, it would have shown that I was highly aggressive. Because there's one of the concepts of the emotional intelligence model that I use is assertiveness.
Right.
It would have been really high at the time. And my empathy would have been low. I can tell you right now, my empathy would have been low. My assertiveness would have been high. And that combo would have shown me that I'm overly aggressive, because there is a good, you know, assertiveness has to do with standing up for yourself and caring about yourself and about your rights and your ability to take care of your own needs. But at the same time, assertiveness has to do with caring about other people and their needs and their feelings too. It's about win-win. I need to get what I want, and I care about you too. So let's both win. How can we make this work? A lack of empathy would just be aggressiveness, because an aggressiveness is, I'm going to take what I want and I couldn't care less about you.
So the selfish, same behavior, but, you know, not combined with empathy.
Yeah,
a problem.
Yeah,
which I'm sure a lot of us can relate to. It's like, if you haven't really thought of in those terms, it's like that. Yeah, empathy doesn't really serve me because of something I've learned, or maybe I just have learned that that's not something. Or your nature is just to go, you know, hey, do more.
Yeah,
get what you need to get resources.
Well, and that's, you know, empathy also often is looked at as being a negative or weakness.
Sure.
Like somehow it goes against, and look, I understand jobs have to get done.
Yeah.
Goals have to be accomplished. That is reality. The benefit of empathy is that helps you achieve those goals and get the projects done without the fallout of being too aggressive. Because what often happens is our behavior is we get a short-term payoff, but we don't think about the long-term consequence of our behavior. So we, being overly aggressive, can get us to accomplish something now, but in the future, if we alienate the people who work with us or the people who work around us, it's going to hurt us in the long run. So empathy enables us to do both.
That makes sense.
Because empathy
and the balance between the two behaviors, really, is what we don't
want
too much of one versus the other.
Yeah, it's sustainable. And it's regenerative.
I want to be totally empathetic, where I don't take care of myself and get resources and get myself.
Yeah, because there's such a thing as too much empathy. When you're constantly thinking about other people, you wind up losing, you know, you lose emotional energy because you're not taking care of self.
for sure.
So empathy enables an alliance. You know, it's a it promotes a collaborative influence, which, you know, when you have people working for you, I mean, don't we want that? I mean, don't we want people who are willing to support us? And especially when we're not looking. You know, empathy, when people feel cared about or valued by their boss or their leader, when they're by themselves, they'll continue to do their job. They will continue to be productive and look at and watch the back of their leader or their boss. The people who don't feel valued or they feel unappreciated or angry because they feel their leader is not looking out for them, they're going to sweep things under the rug. They're going to, sabotage.
There's no skin, right? It's like they're like, whatever. It's not like we're on the same page. You're not supporting me. Why would I support you when you're not around?
Yeah. If it all boils down to I'm doing just enough just to get a paycheck, it's like that line from Office Space. I do just enough not to get fired. You know, that's an older movie. And you may
recall that movie. That movie is sadly still applicable. Have you been working hard? I'm like, I wouldn't say I've been working hard. You know, I'm hardly working. I like this guy. He's a straight shooter.
Yeah. But, you know, and I was thinking about the topic of your podcast, you know, about automation. And I was thinking, you know, how would EQ apply to that?
It's an interesting question, right?
It is. It is. And the answer that I came up with is the fact that so much of business is relationship based, you know, based on trust, based on reliability, based on dependability, being able to work with somebody and know that they're going to pull their weight and that you're going to pull yours and we're going to do something great together. And that's not only in our own company, but it's also with the two companies getting together and working together. So when I think of automation, our ability, because our interpersonal relationships, empathy, social, you know, one of the other key elements of EQ is social responsibility, okay, which is the trait of looking out for the greater community or the greater good at expense to self. For example, there's a grocer here in Florida called Publix. They recently purchased, you know, we're right now at the time of this recording, we're in the middle of the COVID pandemic. Yeah.
Which we haven't even acknowledged. It's amazing. We actually talked about something else. But
I know, right? But the Publix recently purchased a bunch of produce from farmers to donate it to food banks because these farmers were about to have to let it all go to waste because of the supply chain interruption and all
this. Okay, yeah. And there's a lot of outcry about that, right? Where there's like domestic farmers and they bought up a bunch of supplies and donated them, I guess.
Yeah, because they're a supermarket. They're in the position to be able to do that. That is an example of social responsibility. They burn their money. I mean, what?
They get nothing out of it.
They get nothing out of it other than good PR. But they have a reputation for being caring, for caring about their customers, for caring about their clients. And it was something that was, oh yeah, that makes sense. Publix is that way. So when we behave this way on an individual level, having empathy, having trusting relationships, being the kind of person that people are just attracted to, you know, that lends its, and I'm kind of being long-winded about getting to the point on this.
No, it's interesting.
But when we have the reputation for being that way, for being somebody who cares about others, for being somebody who's trustworthy, for being somebody who has an excellent work ethic, we are an attractive person. And this is where the word of mouth marketing comes into play. I'm on this podcast because somebody else said a good word about me to you. I wouldn't, the chances of me meeting you have been very rare or very seldom.
Yeah, probably.
You know, and I'm not, you know, I sound like I'm patting myself on the back, but I'm just trying to come up with an example.
It was your reputation as someone that does interesting work and that was trustworthy probably and got along with the, you know, the person that recommended you, which is Bob.
Yeah. And I didn't search for that. It just automatically happened. And the reason it automatically happened was because I had built a relationship with Bob. And I, you know, right now I'm building a relationship with you. I'm on your podcast. We chatted before we started recording. It's, you know, we have a rapport now. And I noticed every, you know, the episodes that I listen to on your program, every time you finish off, you ask, who would you recommend to be on the program?
I usually spring it on people, but...
What's that?
I usually like springing it on people, but...
Well, I'm sneaky. I prepared.
Yeah, you prepared. Jeez. I think we know nobody else has watched the podcast that's been on it. Until they're like, I'm like, how are you being surprised by this?
So
kudos to you, the first guy ever, though. Either that or everybody just fakes a really good reaction.
So, you know, it's from an automation prospect, building good relationships and having a good reputation. We will get business. We will get good relationships. I will wind up on a great podcast like this one as a result of good behavior. I didn't have to do anything other than be a good person.
That makes sense.
And be reliable. And then somebody else speaks up for me. And for years, it's been this way. When you have a good reputation, people will mark. I mean, that's what Amazon's big, that's the key to Amazon.
Yeah, people don't, like they really advertised, right?
No. Well, in the products they sell, people don't trust. I mean, the big corporations have in general, have a reputation of being dishonest and sleazy. So on Amazon, people are more likely to listen to somebody else, a stranger's review on a product.
Interesting.
Than they would an advertisement.
Because in a sense, what they've created is a trust platform.
Exactly.
Like they're enforcing good behavior on both sides. Sorry to cut you off, but.
No, that's good. Go for it.
When you think of that context, it's like, that's what they've created. Like we all think of them as e-commerce, but like, who am I buying from on Amazon? It could be one of millions of companies, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they've created a framework where they're rewarded for good behavior because they get a good rating.
Mm-hmm. And
they probably have standards of being able to sell on the platform. So they've kind of corralled this, you know, ecosystem of cats. That's what people don't get. Like they all, you know, they shake their finger at Amazon. But what you said actually puts it in interesting context, right?
Yeah. Well, and there's that emotion again. It works because they stimulate a positive emotion in people. When I go to Amazon and I look at a product, I care about the details of what it is I'm buying, but I want to know it works. And I'm not going to listen to the electronics manufacturer,
right,
as to how great it is. I want to know what it's made up of, but then I'm going down to the reviews and I'm listening to people who have already bought it and used it and don't have skin in the game as to whether or not I buy it.
That makes sense.
I'm going to trust them because I know they went out of their way to take the time and make a review. And especially when it's a good review, people are more likely to do bad reviews than they are good reviews because, you know, that's out of true. Anger.
Isn't that called Yelp?
Yeah, like, right.
It's kind of on topic, but I think if you took the people that are on Twitter and the people that are on Yelp and you had a Venn diagram, it would be like a one circle maybe. It's like, which platform for haters? Both of them. It's interesting what you say. So I think in the context of automation, you mentioned like people are trustworthy and reliable, and really people are random, right? So we're making like subjective assessments if people are trustworthy or not, whether we like them, which kind of goes back to this concept, which, you know, you work with them, which is the emotional intelligence, like their ability to earn that trust, right? And one, you know, obviously sites like Amazon have kind of put numbers on it and made it universal in a way to assess that. But I think part of the motivation for automation is to take things that are highly repetitive, where you're getting random results because you're dealing with people and you're trying to force people into systems and to remove people from it. And because robots are obviously, or software is much better at repetitive things and there's no emotional baggage there. So I can see where from that point of view, when people, whether it's you're automating a process with Zapier or Salesforce or some other tool, or machines, robotics, right? You just want that repetitive, consistent result. You want the outcome. And it's, I think there's a feeling that, oh, that's so cold. It's like, well, yeah, people are random and complex. So how can we make, you know, how do we deal with in the future people, because people probably aren't going away. Like, the automation is useless without people.
Mm-hmm.
Sense, like, as the consumer, unless you create robots that are consumers, which I guess is possible. How do we, so is it, are we now saying that the emotional intelligence gets more important because we're going to put people in scenarios where, and is that possible, they're in jobs or, you know, roles in life that are based around their strength, which is creativity, their ability to connect with people and navigate and get them out of repetitive stuff. Is that the future?
I think creativity and EQ is becoming more important as time goes on. I really do, because you're right. Things are becoming more automated. Anything IQ related, if it can be automated, company will do it.
Right.
You know, and as the future approaches, as we keep going, what's going to make us stand out more than anything is our EQ and our creativity. You know, you just had Bob on the show recently.
Right.
And he was talking about, you know, being innovative.
Yeah.
Humans are never going to be out of the scenario. You cannot run a company without people. You just can't. I mean, I don't care how many things you, I mean, the more you automate, the more the people can be used for other things. That's the value of automation.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was driving at. Cause I mean, I think if I look at, we had a guest on, which you might've seen, Elaine Pofeld, and she wrote the book, $1 million One-Person Business, I think that's what it's called.
Yes, I listened to that one.
So there is a trend of people like having businesses where there's everything's automated, it's digital, mm-hmm. And they don't really have employees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess the question is, to your point, do you need people? Maybe. You need consumers, you need people
to work with, or partners, right? Yeah, that's the other side of the coin. Even if you work alone and you automate everything, you still need customers.
Right.
And you're still dealing with an emotional level, getting people to buy your product or service.
And you might need freelance or contract relationships, which are different, right?
Absolutely.
Where there's less risk and maybe more incentive to behave in a certain way, to be emotionally intelligent, because you're not going to partner with someone and you can walk from them, as opposed to the risk of, you know, owning someone's, you know, how do you put it? They're your employee, right? I think that's what's changing is there's this.
Well, that right there, what you just said, makes EQ that much more valuable, because we live in a society now that is so interconnected with Zoom and we are not confined to our local community usually, you know, unless you own a local restaurant, then you're kind of stuck with who's in the area. But, you know, when you're operating a business that's national or global, and you have freelancers that can do things for you that can be done remotely, bad behavior is far less forgivable than it used to be. Because somebody can just, okay, look, you're being a pain, I'm moving on. I'll find, you know, there's 1,000 of, you know, you name the profession. You know, I just, and again, that's what separates people. There are a million people on LinkedIn who know how to do marketing, who know how to do graphic design,
right?
Who know how to do what makes one different than the other. It's going to be this EQ stuff.
It's your relationship.
It's going to be their creativity.
That makes total sense.
So, I mean, how can I use these skills in a unique way to benefit whoever, you know? And if we're going to be a pain, if we say we're going to make a phone call and we don't show up for that phone call, if we exhibit behaviors, because here's a ratio for you. What people, and I learned this from my mentor, Dr. Enos. You have positive emotions, you have negative emotions. A negative emotion is 7 to 14 times more powerful than a positive. So if you want to have one negative thing happen, you at a minimum have to come up with 7 positives simply to equalize it.
Wow. Okay. That's crazy.
So that's the importance of customer service. You can do 1,000 things correctly, but you mess up one time, and that's what somebody's going to focus on because it's more powerful.
Damn. Okay.
And that's why, you know, as business owners, we can be doing really well and we can have 1,000 compliments. But for some reason, we focus on the two negatives that somebody says to us.
Well, entire social networks are obviously because our brain is hardwired for the negative, right? It's like 85% of our brain function is to deal with the negative or to motivate us is this dissatisfaction. So that's why you see social networks have I don't know if the algorithm is basically geared towards negative emotions, right? It rewards you for bad behavior.
And the behavior, problem bad emotions. And the problem with that is it will get stuff done.
Right.
But it's negative emotions. It's toxic. This actually is hurtful to the human body physically. That's why we want to try to be as much as we can motivated by positive emotions. If we're motivated by negative, we're going to hurt ourselves. That's why people get ulcers. That's why people, if people who are more emotionally intelligent, the people who are motivated with positive emotions, they're going to get sick less. Because I know that's what happened to me. I rarely get sick anymore. And it was because it lowers your immune system. All these negative things. So there's so many benefits to it. I mean, I could go on for hours about the ways that it can be helpful.
Yeah, absolutely sure. But it's a really interesting discussion. And what's, I think, positive out of this is that there is a way to be aware of it and to make different choices in those heated moments almost, right? Because I think we're in a very chaotic time that we kind of alluded to. And I think everybody knows, global pandemic, people are been on lockdown for 2 months. Now they're saying 2 more months in some places and other places are opening. And you're seeing how people deal with lack of control, with authority figures making choices for them, and what the implications are, right? And there's a lot of stress. And that's why people are struggling with the idea of being forced to work at home as opposed to it being a choice, right? So you can see all these things coming into play, and the people that seem to be empathetic to, well, this is the situation, I'm going to adapt, versus the people that are nostalgic and trying to hold on to, well, I just wish it would get back to the way it was.
Yeah.
Get back into their comfort zone or struggling, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a great deal of anger, a great deal of sadness and fear.
Yep.
And if we don't identify what's causing those things, because, I'm home and I'm scared, I'm fearful, but why do I feel that way? It's really important to be able to, because if we can identify that, it would help mitigate the kind of fear, because if we can pull up what it is we're fearful of and maybe come up with a plan to compensate, or maybe we realize what we're afraid of isn't actually realistic, it can really help us to mitigate those negative feelings. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's really throwing people for a loop. I mean, I know I've been on the phone with some friends and some others that you have to talk to them, because they're upset and emotional, and try to be the support for them. It's happening all over the place. Domestic abuse is way up, it's really horrible. But that's why I do what I do is, there are a lot of businesses I could have started, but I saw the impact that it had on my life and how much better of a quality of life that I had. And I wanted to be able to bring that to people and to use this assessment and to work with Dr. English and be able to help people be successful, not only in business, but also personally, because the skills that they learn apply in all areas of life. It's not just business. It helps them at home, it helps them at work, it helps them at school, it helps them anywhere. And if I can make a difference in the world and make money in the process, why shouldn't I? Why can't I?
Sounds like a win-win, as you say.
Yeah. So, and that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted. I wanted win-win-win for everybody. The company wins. The people win. It is. It really is.
Well, I want to be conscious of your time. First of all, I want to acknowledge you for the good work that you've been doing. And this is it's a really fascinating subject where I think, it's easy to not think in this context and just deal with the shrapnel of how our behavior is every day. So I want to acknowledge the fact that you're doing work that brings this to the surface in both organizations and individually. And I think it's really valuable.
And I appreciate that. And I appreciate you giving me a forum to talk about it up on your podcast here. I really appreciate that, for all the good things you're doing with this program too.
Well, come back anytime. You would be one of the first to come back. I have to keep inviting people. I keep forgetting to. We did just recently have Steve Hoffman back, so that's great. That's hopefully a positive sign. Well, listen, I'm going to wrap with a few things. Adam, how do people get in touch with you?
LinkedIn is the main way to do it. If you just look for Adam Rosenzweig, you know, I'm all over LinkedIn, so just find me there. I welcome any and all connection requests, and you know, I'll get on the phone with you. I'm all about relationships. Happy to talk with anybody.
Terrific. If you are the sum of the five people you spend the most time with, who do you, Adam, spend the most time with?
Oh, wow. See, you know, that's the one I didn't prepare for. You know, I am a religious person, so this might sound a little cliche. But I, you know, honestly, Jesus would be one because of some what he accomplished while he was here. And all the, there are certain individuals in the Bible that I would enjoy spending time with too. Spirituality is really important to me. So probably Jesus, probably Abraham, probably David, some of the apostles. I mean,
oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
that's
I mean,
first time anyone said that. So that's amazing. That's the first, you're very unique now. In that answer.
Well, that's good. That's a good thing, right?
And my theory is that Abraham started all the problems in the world. You can trace every single problem we have today back to Abraham, one way or the other.
You mean Adam?
No.
I see what you mean. Oh yeah. Okay. Oh yeah, about the lineage, all the cultural conflict. I see what you mean.
Totally. All Western civilization and non-Western civilization somehow traces back to Abraham.
Well,
and if people don't understand, go look up Abraham and you'll understand the tribes and his sons and split off and how everything kind of like spills out of that.
Yeah, unfortunately a lot of conflict does come from the lineage issues that go on.
We're fighting a 4,000 year old war that was in the desert in tents with Abraham. So a couple more things. One is, Adam, how are you changing the world?
Well, with you know, I like to think more of influencing the world, being one person. I mean, I guess it's the same thing. You know, with my company, you know, I try to be a positive influence as much as I can, not only emotionally, but because, like I said, I am a spiritual person. I try to influence, you know, in a positive way, spiritually too. You know, and everybody within arm's reach, you know, be a good person, be peaceable, be a force for good, both in my company and in my personal life.
I love it. That's a great answer. Okay. And the final thing, you know what's coming, which is when we have interesting people on the podcast, we like you to nominate other interesting people. You've had some time to think about it. Who do you, Adam, want to nominate as a future guest?
I was thinking about it. And I decided on a man named Monty Clark.
Oh, Monty was actually also, who nominated Monty? Did Bob? So is he a LinkedIn coach?
Yeah, he does LinkedIn marketing training. So he specializes in marketing via LinkedIn and exclusively that, and in optimizing ways to do that. Awesome guy. Always ready to be helpful. He was giving me some good advice when I first connected with him. I think he's a great guest. He could be a great guest.
All right, Monty, you have been nominated to at least twice now that I can remember. We've got to get Monty on the show now. So I'll check and see, but make the introduction. It'll kind of reinforce it. I don't know if I've been introduced to him yet because I would have booked something. But so Monty Clark, you've been renominated to be a future guest on the Automate and Grow podcast. Adam, I want to thank you for being my guest today, and I really appreciate your time and enjoyed our discussion today.
Absolutely. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was great to meet you and it was great to be on. And I'll definitely be back whenever you want me.
Terrific. We will look forward to that day. All right. This has been another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. We will see you on a future episode of Automate and Grow.